And welcome back into Morning Drive, Hour 4 on this Thursday. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nick Cale, Braden Gall, Chase McCabe with you from Barrel House Jack Daniels inside of Bridgestone Arena. Rick Bird, the head coach at Belmont, with us for the next half hour as we talk March Madness. And this segment brought to you by New Life Regenerative Medicine. All right, coach, so we got the Sweet 16 back in action tonight. Two of the locals, or quote locals, the SEC squads with Kentucky and with Texas A&M. Your thoughts overall, because we've got two of the eight left from the SEC that made March Madness. How do you think the conference as a whole has represented? And obviously with Kentucky and A&M left standing, how do you like them moving forward?
Well, I think on the front end, they started out great. And I guess the second round wasn't as good. I think Auburn was quite a disappointment. I know Tennessee didn't plan on expect to lose to Loyola Chicago, but I also think that Loyola Chicago is a team that could have done quite well in the SEC, won their share of games, and it's not as big a surprise as people think. I'm not the greatest analyst for some of this stuff because I spend my entire time during the season watching our video or the teams that we're going to play, and I haven't seen Kentucky play a whole lot, but there's no question that after all the whining that went on, that they've got the easiest path to the Final Four that I can remember any team having. Mm-hmm. And although they can lose either of these games, I would suspect they'll make it. Texas A&M's a hard one. Started off great, maybe had a couple of injuries, then went on that big slide and start wondering whether they're even going to make the NCAA tournament. And now it looks like they've turned it on to be the kind of team they were supposed to be. I'm a big fan of Billy Kennedy. I think he's a good, solid coach and a really good guy. And I'd like to see them do well.
And their big trees down low showed up against North Carolina in a big way. And I think that's what separates them from a lot of seven seeds out there. Is they got a bunch of rebounding seven-footers that can really do some damage. My question is, you know, parity's been the term we've used. I know it's like an overused word for every sport, but the conversation around college basketball this year was that there's not this great team. There's not an 0-9 North Carolina. There's not a 39-0 Kentucky. There's not a team that's just this dominant number one force, and that'll be great for the sport, and that'll be great for the tournament. Well, we've had a lot of craziness in this tournament. We've seen a lot of betting favorites go down. We've seen a lot of top seeds go down. There's still Villanova, Kansas, and Duke sitting there. Those are pretty big programs. Is it good for the sport if we end up with Texas A&M and, you know, Nevada in the Final Four? Is there need to be a mix of power programs versus the mid-major? Like, what's the best situation for college basketball as a sport in terms of the teams that could make it to the Final Four?
Well, I think the immediate part of that is that the more marquee names that are there, the more excited people are going to be to watch it. I mean, I think the same thing happens in golf. You know, we'd rather see Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson and Jordan Spieth and Jason Day and Dustin Johnson in the last three groups in the U.S. Open or the Masters if we could. It's not been that long ago that Villanova was not one of those names. I mean, you got to start somewhere to become one of those names, and I think it.
Mark Few.
I think exactly. I think it is good when you've got the big names there. You've got a Cinderella somewhere that makes it. And then I can remember way back in my early days of I don't remember the year. You guys could look it up, but Penn made it all the way to the Final Four. And. And even before that, Bill Bradley took Princeton to the Final Four, and Tom Crean took Marquette a few years ago when they were not really that kind of a program.
They had a pretty good player on that team.
They did, and they got. I think all those teams I mentioned got thumped pretty good in the semifinal game. So I don't know about the excitement of that. So I think a mixture is fine. But if you were in charge of television commercial revenue, you'd want the big names on there.
Let me get your thoughts on really the state of the sport right now, because, you know, a couple of weeks ago on the show, multiple days, we talked about the FBI scandal with all these programs. And, you know, you've got the one and done situation and the quality of play, guys going to the NBA. You know, Kentucky typically has the one and done type talent. This year they're a little bit down, but you look at a Duke and Mike Krzyzewski, he's changed his philosophy and he's getting the one and done type players. What are your thoughts on the sport right now and where it's heading as far as the talent coming in and then heading off to the NBA.
Yeah, I think something's going to happen there. I'm pretty sure that they're going to end up saying a kid can go right out of high school. That's where it seems to be headed. I even heard a discussion that maybe they'd go to a two-year thing instead of the three-year that baseball has, where you need to stay in college before you go. I'm a dinosaur on a lot of this stuff. As I grew up, I was a huge fan of college basketball, and I could watch guys and remember them for 4 years. My favorite player was there for 4 years, and so then about the time I was in college, we were just talking about that off air. Bernard King went after his junior. That's when they kind of started going hardship. They had to apply for hardship and all that kind of stuff, and now we're down to the guys playing 1 year. I don't like it as much at all. But some guys your all's age, maybe that's about all you've grown up with.
Well, what's interesting though is I think it's cyclical. I mean, you say dinosaur, and I would call it pragmatic. I mean, I think there's a way to eliminate a lot of this corruption, if whatever you want to call it that, is just give them. This is an NBA problem too. It's not college basketball's problem. It's an NBA rule that's been put in place.
Right.
Just let them go pro. And if they come to college, have them stay 3 years like the baseball rule. Have them be student athletes. It solves the whole problem, because the people that are in trouble right now are the guys that are worth $300 million to Adidas or to Nike. It's the James Hardens of the world that are worth that amount of money. And they're all trying to fight for their market share. 47 Nike schools in the tournament this year, 9 Adidas schools. It's not rocket science why Adidas is trying to get as many players as possible. Just let them go pro, and it solves some of the problems. I don't think it's old school, Coach. I think it's well, pragmatic.
Well, I appreciate that. I agree with the concept. I wish there was professional basketball and there was college basketball, which is amateur basketball, and that's what a kid decides he wants to do. I understand all the discussion about, well, schools are making all this money and coaches are getting paid all this. I understand the kids aren't getting anything. Well, they are getting something, but certainly they're not getting anywhere near. But at the same time, don't you think if there was a pro team in Lexington called the Lexington Leopards, and they had all those great Kentucky kids there, the one-and-done kids, and they were playing a game, and Kentucky was playing a game in Rupp Arena, that there'd be 23,000 seat people in there to see Kentucky play, and about 750 to see those other kids, the Lexington Leopards, who they had no tradition. So, in Alabama football, the same way. I mean, they're going to, you know, it's. I don't think enough credit is given to the tradition of the schools, and that's why people show up and watch them play. And I don't think it's necessarily about quality of basketball. It's about quality of the team. Kentucky fans expect them to be really good, but they'd rather go watch those Kentucky college kids play than better players playing for the quote-unquote Lexington Leopards. And but one more thing before I stop ranting about it.
No, keep going, by all means.
Here's the hard part to me, and that's just Belmont's got a lot of talented kids in our school musically. And if one of them is a singer-songwriter and can go on tour and make $1 million a year on tour and writing songs and all that kind of stuff, then that's okay for him to do it. And so it's fair to ask the question, why can't a freshman or sophomore basketball player do the same thing?
When we come back, Rick Bird will join us for one more segment, and we've got some very good stories to roll out. Stick around. It is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And welcome back into Morning Drive on Thursday. ESPN 102.5 The Game, great to have you in as March Madness resumes tonight, the Sweet 16, and we've got Rick Bird, head coach at Belmont, here with us, and some interesting stories on tap.
Yeah, we'll get to some old school stuff here in a second, but you always talk about I've heard you, coach, talk about this before with the change of film and scouting, and, you know, tell us what it was like to scout in 1979,
yeah.
1982, like... Now you've got iPads with the entire game clipped up to every single pick and roll with every single player. How different is technology? How has it changed the game over 30 years?
My first head coaching job, assistant coaching job for that matter, was at Maryville College, Division III school in East Tennessee. And we would literally go play games without a clue about the other team. We didn't know what their players could do. unless I could drive and scout them, which we can't do now, actually, but we could then I didn't know anything, or unless I got a coach that had played against that team and could talk to him, which is pretty much what I did. Who's their best shooters? What kind of defenses did they play? That sort of thing. But everybody was in the same boat, you know. We're all still in the same boat right now. We just know everything that the other team can do. And today, in the last 10 years, then the ability to get anything about any team, any play, if I want to see every zone baseline out of bounds offensive play that Lipscomb runs, I can get it with one click of a button and it's pulled up. And if anybody can get all of ours. And so you don't surprise people very much anymore. And it creates, even though it's much easier than doing the old VHS tapes, which is when I got to Belmont and we're in the league with Lipscomb, the NAIA league, then it was all VCR stuff, and you had to try, and then you have to get this dual deck, and you had to try to clip it so you can show your team. And when I was at Tennessee as a student assistant, I used to like going back in pulling out the big old films and watching the great Kentucky teams play, from at that time would have been 15 years prior to that. Now that took a lot of work. There's not many people anymore that could put that together, those reel-to-reel things together, and even make them work. But that was a lot of fun. But it's changed dramatically now. Even though the time is less because you can click that one button, you also could sit there for days and watch. And at some point, you've got to decide I've seen enough and go on.
Paralysis by analysis, I guess, right? So you talked about being at Tennessee and. As a student assistant, did you ever have to guard Bernard King in practice?
No one guarded Bernard King very well. If I ever had to, I did as good as anybody, because he's the best basketball player I've ever been around, for sure. And I was lucky to be Ernie Grunfeld and Bernard King were a little younger than me, but I was a JV player, and they kept me around to practice against the varsity, just as a guy to throw in there and abuse. So I practiced about 4 hours a day for that year that I played. Wow. JV and varsity. And the next year I was a JV student assistant coach, and I still practiced with the varsity. So all that was terrific training for me.
What was campus like when those two guys were doing what they were doing? I mean, what was that like?
You know, it was pretty amazing. I mean, it's the reason that they've got the Thompson Bowling Center there is because of what they did in Stokely Athletic Center every time. I mean, it was exciting. It was packed. I don't know that Thompson Bowling has ever come close to the height of what Stokely Athletic Center was when those guys were playing big games there.
Coach, let me, because you mentioned when we were talking about the technology aspect and the VHS and rewinding things and, you know, reels together. With technology has come analytics and stats, yep, sabermetrician, and all this next level information. How much of a factor is that in your day to day nowadays? You've been coaching for over 30 years at Belmont. Is that something you install and implement into preparation and planning?
Yes, it is, actually. I think, I mean, back in the day, I used to think about, well, how many points are guys scoring per field goal attempt? And you know, a lot of people still say, well, this guy's averaging 22 points a game, and this guy's averaging 14 points a game. This guy's a much better scorer. Well, he shoots it a lot more.
So anyone can be Antoine Walker.
Nowadays, then effective field goal percentage includes the twos and the threes. What they call total shooting percentage includes the free throws. So how often you get to the line and you look at a guy's total shooting percentage, you get a real value of what he is as an offensive player for you, and how your team's doing. And what I've found, there's one site that somehow measures the mid-range game. And they've got the close proximity shots.
That's a thing? Mid-range game?
Mid-range jump shots, and then three-pointers. And what you'll find is that the very best team in the country at mid-range percentage is less than 50%, the very best.
Wow.
In middle of the pack's more like 40. So if you're shooting 40 on 12-foot jumpers, 12 to 14-foot, 17-foot jumpers, then you're only scoring 0.8 points per game. And
so
that's
the three
not,
is more valuable.
That's not good enough. That's not good enough. So on that same site, when it shows the percentage of times that you shoot, that a team shoots mid-range shots, we're dead last in the country. We're 351st.
Wow.
And because we don't shoot them. But then it makes our effective field goal percentage every year one of the best. And in fact, our two-point percentage, we've probably been first in the country for the last 6 years in two-point percentage. This year without even a real post-scoring threat, but just because our team doesn't shoot those shots.
So I guess there's some truth, because everybody jokes, the mid-range game is a lost art, but like there's some truth to that. It's actually the most are the stats indicating that's the most difficult shot right now?
Yeah, that's the shot that you get the poorest return from.
That's crazy.
If you shoot 33% from the three-point line, you're at 50%. You're at 1 point per possession. And most teams shoot well over 33. It's one of the reasons why they're looking at the FIBA line in the NIT instead of the college line.
Mm-hmm. Rick Bird joining us here. So take us through what some of these coaches are doing as we go into the Sweet 16 tonight and tomorrow, the Elite Eight. Kind of give us.
I don't know. I've never been there.
I meant the preparation, and then obviously the quick turnaround. So you guys and a lot of leagues do the Thursday Saturday thing.
Yeah.
So you sort of know what it's like to have the 4-day buildup and then the quick turnaround. So, yeah. But you know the opponent then. What are the coaches like? What's the strategy? Is there a strategy to the Sweet 16 matchup? And then we always talk about, hey, it's going to be a lot tougher on that 2-day turnaround.
Well, I'm just telling you what we would normally do, and that is on Monday of that week in practice, we might go over some – we might guard some stuff that the team on Saturday, or in the case of it could be two games. You look at – you got a coach scouting each of those teams, the team you're going to play on Thursday and the two teams that you could play on Saturday. And so there's everybody's got it. So the guys that we might play on Saturday comes back with, they run a lot of this, they run a lot of that. You might even just do defensive drills. Might not even say this is Nevada. You just say we're gonna guard this in practice, we're gonna guard this in practice. And then on Tuesday and Wednesday you're gonna prepare exclusively, or we would, let me say that again, for the team that we're gonna play on Thursday night. And then as soon as we know who we're gonna play, the next day generally is going to be just more walkthrough stuff, and you really don't feel like you can do much full speed if you've played Thursday and you're going to play Saturday. But you walk through all their stuff, and it's difficult, but it's the same for both. And a lot of it is about how much do you do. If you play zone and man, now you got to go over twice as much stuff, because here's what they do against zone, here's what they do against man. So if you don't do a lot, there's not as much preparation. And if they don't do a lot, there's not as much preparation.
Do you, now that the season's over and there's still basketball going on, for do you still sit down and watch it like wall-to-wall today and tomorrow and Saturday and Sunday? Are you a fan of the game the way everybody else watches the tournament?
Well, there's the Miami tennis tournament's going on. That's really good. And the match play golf is going on. That's really good.
I knew I liked this guy.
I got a DVR a bunch of it and figure out, but no, I love watching the games. I'll tell you when it's tough. It's tough when you get knocked out, and for a few days, you don't care who wins. You don't care if it's your best friend. After we got knocked out on Saturday night, then I watched Lipscomb's game because Casey Alexander played for me and coached with me.
Sure.
For a long time. I didn't want to, in the sense that I didn't feel like it. We just got knocked out. I don't care about watching basketball at all. But that was a different situation, and I did, and was glad they won. But then you get over. It's literally like grief a little bit. When you don't get where you're going, when you don't achieve what you wanted to achieve, there's a period of grief. You just don't want anything to do with it.
Did you fill out a WGC match play bracket?
I did. Yeah.
All right. Well, if you ever want to do a golf podcast, just let me know. We can definitely.
I'm all over.
We'll kick it around for a little bit.
My dad was a sports writer, and I got to go with him to the Masters starting in 1971.
Awesome.
I like tennis, but golf my whole life, way more interested in that.
Belmont Final Four run, or Rick Bird gets to play in the Masters.
Well, as strange as it sounds, we've got a better chance of getting the Final Four.
Very good.
And by the way, Davis Cup also, real quickly before we let you go, April 4th or April 6th to the 8th.
7th and 8th. Same weekend as the Masters. You're talking about DVR going or whatever. That's going to have to happen. But, yeah, it's going to be great. You've already said USTA. /or/ or whatever it is. I don't even know what a hashtag is. So
USTA.com/Davis Cup is where you can get tickets. April 6th through the 8th, USA versus Belgium in the Davis Cup. High, high, high level tennis right here in Nashville.
Coach, thanks, good stuff. Thanks for coming
by. Thank you all a lot.
Appreciate it. Rick Bird, head coach at Belmont. When we come back to the Preds, Hal Gill's going to join us. Stay there. It's Morning Drive. Oh, that was good stuff from Rick Bird. Time to get back to the ice. You know what that means. It's time for Hal Gill every Thursday at 9:30. He's brought to you by Park and Fly, who would like to invite travelers to Park and Fly for their vacation. They have indoor ballet and outdoor self-parking rates that start at just $9 per day. Hal, we appreciate a couple of minutes. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, guys. How are you?
We are doing excellent. Preds going for 5 in a row tonight as Toronto comes to Bridgestone Arena, one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. What is the big key for tonight and to extend the winning streak?
This is going to be a test. This is a young team, and I think they may get the big guy, Austin Watson, back. Austin Matthews. Austin Watson may be back in the lineup, but Austin Matthews may be back for Toronto. So that might be fun to watch. He's a heck of a player, and he's got a good group around him. So it's going to be a test for the Preds.
And you know, Hal, we were talking last night on Smashville Live with Matthias Ekholm about sort of staying motivated game to game, knowing that that they've got a playoff spot clinched and an opportunity to clinch a division here pretty soon. And he had an interesting answer where he just sort of talks about, hey, you've got to find ways to motivate, but that we're cruising and we're confident. There does seem to be a big difference between how this team finished last year on edge and how they're going to finish this year. How do you avoid that affecting you when game one of a playoff starts?
It's tough. I mean, everyone talks about, it's a tough position. We put these players in a tough spot, asking them, how do they feel? Of course they feel good. They win every game they're playing. It's like, how do you not feel good about that? You should. And they're doing everything they can, and they've been consistent. They've won games that they should have won. They've come back and won games that maybe they shouldn't have won. So they're doing everything right. I don't think you can control everything around you. All you can control is go out, play the best you can, play for something every night. And that's what Matthias Ekholm, I like what he said, is, basically he's talking about being a pro. Just go out and prove yourself every night, prove how good you are, win the game, play the right way. They're an honest team. They know when they don't play well, but, man, they're playing a lot of good hockey right now and consistently. So they just got to keep grinding and do whatever they can to win and be ready to go when comes playoffs.
Hal, earlier this morning we were having a Hall of Fame discussion, kind of a classic sports radio debate, and we were talking about guys on the 2018 Preds that 20 years from now we'll look back and say could very well end up being in the Hall of Fame, and the unanimous guy was the general manager, David Poile, but after that is where the debate began, and we got into Pekka Rinne, who is closing in on that possible milestone, but maybe still has a little bit of work to do. What are your thoughts on him one day getting to Toronto and making the Hall of Fame?
Well, you know what? I like the conversation. I think it really comes down to, can they win the cup? If you can seal the deal and win the cup and go on a run here, that gives you a pretty good argument for the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame is really about, obviously, the consistent over your career performances, and that is Pekka Rinne. He's been awesome since he's started playing in the NHL. If you throw a couple cups or one cup under his belt, that definitely boosts the argument. So it's about winning, and that's really what Pekka has done this year. He's proven that he can. He's changed his game a little bit. He's done all the right things. I don't think there's an argument why he shouldn't be a Hall of Famer. If he can get a cup, I think that gives him a lot more clout.
Hal, Victor Arvidsson said that he looks at the standings like religiously, like every day he's looking at the standings and checking to see where things are at and where team is and where team's at. Give us your thoughts on the matchups and what would give Nashville maybe the toughest path, and in your opinion, as you've seen all these teams, you've been to all these buildings this year, what would be the toughest path, you think, first, second, third round for Nashville right now today, hypothetically, if they were to all get started?
It's tough to say. I always say, are you in it to win one round, or are you in it to win four rounds and win the cup? And right now, I think there's like six teams that could possibly be there. We looked at Colorado. There's not a team that I don't think they can beat. I think we're looking past that, and then you look at what is going to be the most taxing round. That may be good. It might be good to go in and have a battle. That sometimes primes you up for the second round. I think right now it looks like Winnipeg will be in the second round. If you play, you don't want to play in Anaheim because you know it's going to be a grinding series. But that might be the best thing, assuming they get the win. Then they go in and they're ready, battle-tested to go against Winnipeg. So it depends on how you look at it. I think there's... You look at Colorado, which would be a good, I think it would be a good matchup. I think if St. Louis can stay alive and get in this thing, I think the Preds kind of have their number, but that's going to be a physical series as well. So there's no easy series. It's all what you make of it. If you come through that series without any injuries, then you look at Winnipeg. If you come through and you're battle tested and you're ready, maybe it's better to face Winnipeg after that. But I think it's going to go through Winnipeg. I think it'll go through Vegas. Those are two teams that you have to watch out for. The first round might be a different story. Who knows? And it's all in how they play those games. That's really what it comes down to.
Hal, we were talking last week during free agency in the NFL with the Titans and certain teams with windows of opportunities to win championships, and obviously the Preds are trying to get back to the Stanley Cup Finals and bring home the Stanley Cup. When we talk about windows of opportunity, I kind of look at this team and I compare them to other marquee teams that are playing at a very high level right now around the four major sports, and maybe short of the Golden State Warriors, I don't know of a team that's got a better, bigger window than this Preds team, because obviously when Pekka decides to retire, they've got a very good goaltender, but a lot of guys in their mid to late 20s that are in the prime of their career. Just how big is this window of opportunity for the Predators?
I think it's huge. I don't think David Poile has pulled any punches. He's let everything out. He's gotten all the pieces to put it together. What I like about it, the Preds aren't reliant on one player. There's no Steph Curry that's going to, they're going to live and die on. The Jofa line is obviously a big line, but go through it all. Turris, I think Bonino, you got him for that 2A, 2B center that you can rely on. And then you go to the fourth line, has had great success. You have four awesome D that you can match up against, and everyone is no one's looking on the outside. Mike Fisher came out of retirement. I don't know how many times he'll do that, but there's really not anyone that you're saying, all right, this is it. We got to win right now. But they've loaded up, and they're ready to go right now. So I think you got 2 or 3 years, and I'm not counting out, if Pecorino decides he's done, UC Saros, I think, can come in and do the job. I think he's proven that. So they got a good window here, but I think the time is now.
Hal, we appreciate the time this morning, and we will be certainly paying attention to the broadcast tonight, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. It's going to be a great game tonight. Enjoy.
You got it.
Thanks, Hal.
Hal Gill joining us.
You totally sparked my
did I really?
My brainwaves there on the comparison. I think there's a team that I think there's a team that they are very, very closely comparable to in another major sport.
Ooh, are you giving a tease here?
I think there is a team that the Nashville Predators almost – that feels very similar to another team that I think is about to go on a major run in another major sport. I want to see what you guys think about
this. We will get to that on the other side. Plus, on tap tonight. Stay there. It's Morning Drive. Welcome back into Morning Drive on this Thursday edition of the program, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Braden's got some interesting things to spark.
You kind of said the Predators are set up for a really great window, which we've talked a lot about on all of our shows here, about how this is the beginning of a big window. And I like Hal's take, hey, the time is now to go win. I agree with him on that. But there is a window with all these young players locked up and more in the pipeline coming. It feels like a really fun next 10 years, right? Not just two, but there's like an 8-year window, it feels like, for the Predators. But it reminds me of, you said, of any other team in any major sport, they're sort of set up better than anybody. There's one team that strikes me as a very similar team. They have not won a championship, at least not with the current group of people. They've won championships in the past, but not with their current group of players. They got very, very close last year to winning a championship, came up just short. They are loaded with absolute star power, super stud players that they've acquired through drafts, they've acquired through free agency, they've acquired through trades, and it is the New York Yankees. The New York Yankees are loaded with players. They got great draft picks that they've developed and come up through the ranks. They've got Gilbert Torres, who's going to make his debut this year, who's got a premium player. They've got Aaron Judge, who comes up through the system, premium player. They trade for Sonny Gray. They trade for Giancarlo Stanton. They came up just short last year in the AFC – or in the AFC – in the ALCS to the Houston Astros, getting experience maybe ahead of the curve than we thought, minus the coaching change. I think there are some similarities to what the Yankees' next 5 years could look like, which drives me insane as a Mets fan, and what the next 5 years of the Predators could look like. I think there's some similarities that if you're trying to point out a team who's on the verge of breaking through with some star elite star power, the difference being they have 27 world championships and the Predators have none, but that's, let's be honest, they won like 12 of those before integration in like the 18 and 1900s, so that doesn't count.
Also a league that's got no salary cap as well, which I think...
And they have the biggest bankroll of anybody, so... Yes, there are some differences, but you mentioned Minnesota Vikings.
That's who I was thinking.
Which I think is some of that. The difference is, I think... If you're going to compare a football team, I think you sort of have to have a homegrown quarterback, like Pekka Rinne is a homegrown goaltender, and they went out and sort of got Kirk Cousins. But I agree, a lot of homegrown players, great front office for the Minnesota Vikings. There's something about this. Like I hate the fact that I think this highly of this Yankees team. Like I hate it as a Mets fan, but this Yankees team is loaded for the next 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, and that lineup is going to be scary with Sanchez and obviously Judge and
elite bullpen.
And the bullpen is good. The only thing I wonder about it is the starting rotation. Is their pitching good enough to carry them?
I mean, right now you got Tanaka and Sonny Gray at least at the top of that rotation, and that's a pretty good start. So, it just kind of hit me as you were talking about all the other sports. Because basketball is so different. Basketball, it's like, all it takes is like two dudes. If you get two great players, that's all you need.
We're putting the Predators in the same conversation with the Yankees. I mean, that if you're a Preds fan and you hear Nashville Predators, New York Yankees, you know your franchise is going in a great direction.
And I want to be clear. I'm not comparing histories, obviously.
Of course.
That's not the point. The point is sort of like in its current construct.
Current teams.
And I don't – listen, Boston's got a really good team. The Red Sox are really, really good. I'm surprised. Like Kansas City would have been an apt comparison when they won the they lost the World Series the first year, then they win the World Series the next year. A lot of really homegrown, young, talented players. The Royals would have been a really good comparison to the Predators. The problem is they dismantled it all. 3 years later, they just tore it all apart, and now everybody's everywhere else. And so Lorenzo Cain's in Milwaukee, and Eric Hosmer's in San Diego, and they traded all their pitchers away. Like it's just they couldn't contain it because of the salary cap. I think that's where the Predators, and to credit to David Poile, he's put them in a position to sign all their guys long-term. And that's where the Royals failed after winning their World Series. They didn't capitalize and get all those guys signed long-term.
Yeah, I got to be honest. Like, I didn't when you brought this up before the break, I was trying to think of where you were going to go. And I didn't put that comparison together with the Yankees, but I like it. And it's, the current state with the young players. I think you're spot on with that. We'll have to see how Aaron Boone works as the manager. I don't know about that.
Like I said, had Joe Girardi been there, still, I think I would feel better about the comparison.
I think they're going to take a step back this year just because you have a guy that's been doing TV for the last 5 years.
Yeah, I don't get the Aaron Boone hire. But
I don't either. But
all right, that being said, let's get to On Tap tonight.
It's your guide for the happenings around town and what to watch from your couch. Here's what's on tap tonight, now on Morning Drive.
So tonight is kind of like a sports fan's dream night. You've got meaningful hockey, meaningful basketball. You've got March Madness, the Sweet 16. So many things to pick and pull from. But I will go, because the obvious given one is Preds and Leafs tonight. So I always try to avoid that to give somebody else the opportunity to take something else in, because obviously not everybody lives and dies with one thing. I'm going to go college basketball tonight, and I'm going to go with Michigan Texas A&M, because I think, first of all, that'll be the most competitive of the four games in the Sweet 16 tonight. But I also feel like, and I continue to beat this drum, John Beilein is the most underrated, underappreciated coach in all of college basketball. I feel like he's even overshadowed in his own state by Tom Izzo.
Yep.
So I'll go Wolverines and the Aggies.
That's what I was going to ask, because everybody wants to watch college basketball. Again, Predators goes without saying tonight. There's 10 games in the NHL, so there's a lot on the NHL slate tonight. But if you had to watch one college basketball game of the four, you only get one, which one are you watching? You're taking Michigan A&M. I would also take Michigan A&M. Chase, you get one game tonight. Which of the four are you watching?
He's going Sister Jean. I already know.
Yeah.
Kentucky-Kansas State's pretty intriguing just because of the Kentucky factor.
Kentucky-Kansas State, that would be the one. I want to see that.
And, oh, by the way, we mentioned this yesterday on Tap, taking a look at the scores around the NHL. St. Louis has now jumped Dallas in the standings. And I loved Arvidsson's answer last night on Smashville Live. He said, yeah, I watch the standings every day. I stare at them. I check them religiously. I look at the standings. I think that's a cool thing for a player to admit, which means he now sees that you got the Golden Knights at the Sharks tonight. That's a big one. The Kings at the Avalanche. Huge game for seeding in the Western Conference. The LA Kings at the Colorado Avalanche. So that one's at one to keep an eye on as well tonight as far as seeding in the Western Conference.
Sister Jean or Billie Jean? On the spot right here, what are we going with? Sister Jean
like
or Billie Jean?
Like what? Like
in anything.
In a beer drinking contest?
In a beer drinking contest, in a microphone singing contest. Billie Jean or Sister Jean?
That might be a sillier question than Deion Sanders or Kevin Byard. I have no idea.
Does Deion Sanders know Billie, who
I guess
Sister
I'll go
Jean
Billie,
is?
I'll go Billie Jean. I don't know. She's
like Billie Jean King.
I was going to say it's a great song.
Or the Michael Jackson song, which I'm sure I'd screw the lyrics up for, because
you probably would.
I botched that one earlier. What was that song? It was by the Eagles that I screwed up, right?
Yeah. Oh. Heartache Tonight.
It's going to be a heartache tonight for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
It's
going
to be a party tonight.
There's going to be a party tonight for the Toronto Maple Leafs until the puck drops. And then the Preds, by the way, we got predictions. I'm going to go 3-2 Nashville tonight.
I hate it when you do this.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I've been right 92% of the time since I stepped foot in this city.
Picking hockey games is just ridiculous.
Unless you're mean, you get them right 9 out of 10 times.
And what good has that done you?
Well, since I don't really actually wager, netted me nothing.
It's hard to pick against Nashville right now on this streak and in this building, but it will come to an end at some point. The regulation loss has to happen at some point, and Toronto has actually had their number.
One regulation loss this season and last season. Since what, February 17th?
No, zero regulation losses since February 17th. They have not lost in regulation since in over a month. So it will happen at some point.
It's incredible.
The laws of physics, I guess, suggests that it will happen at some point, right?
The laws of physics cease to exist on your stove?
Yes, exactly. What do you got magic grits?
let me take a look at the latest line real quick for this game. It's actually dropped down. So Nashville now minus 172. Chase,
it's going overtime.
Going overtime?
It's going overtime.
I could see that. And look,
we'll get a point regardless.
Freddie Anderson stole a point the last time in the shootout. It went to a shootout. So
they've played well against Nashville.
They have, and I think this will be a good game. It's going to have that playoff feel, whatever cliche you want to use. But the Preds are back home for the first time in a while, and it's one of those single home games, and then they're back on the road again. I think it goes OT, and I think the Preds win.
Okay, final update on the stupid poll question of the day.
Yes, so when you think of Hall of Fame, what is the first that comes to mind? A lot of people actually wrote in the Hockey Hall of Fame because we didn't have that listed as our four. There's about 10 people responded, and we have 2 votes for the WWE Hall of Fame.
I love wrestling, but that thing's a joke.
1 vote for the Country Music Hall of Fame, or 2 votes, I should say.
Wonderful people over there at the Country Music Hall of Fame.
4 votes for the Hockey Hall of Fame. Had about 10 people write in. But then 50% of the vote goes to Cooperstown.
It's just a special. It's just a special Hall of Fame. I the College Football Hall of Fame, I think, where SEC Media Days are going to be this summer for the first time ever, is. I had a chance to work there every weekend a couple of seasons ago. A lot of driving, but a beautiful building. It is a really, really awesome must see if you're a college football fan. And I am not a Hall of Fame person. I don't tell people, oh, you got to go check out this Hall of Fame. But I would, if you're a college football fan, it's a pretty cool experience. You get to see all the trophies. You got the helmet wall. There's a whole full. They got a whole field there with some turf. You can kick field goals and stuff. It's
yeah, I've been there. It's really cool.
It's really cool.
All right, so good stuff today. We appreciate Rick Byrd, Belmont head coach, for stopping by to talk March Madness for a good 45 minutes. That was very good. Kevin McCarthy of the Preds, Jason Wolf of the Tennessean, and of course Hal Gill from the Preds. So very good stuff. We'll be back tomorrow, 6 a.m. Have a great night. Enjoy the hockey. Enjoy the Sweet 16. And we'll break it all down tomorrow at 6 a.m. right here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.